Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Superior schools have a new tobacco policy, and I'm betting it won't allow me to chew tobacco in class.
That's true, yeah. Students and visitors aren't allowed to use tobacco on school property, but now they also aren't allowed to use imitation tobacco products on school grounds after the Superior School Board changed its policies this week. The policies in question discourage promotion of tobacco products and anything that would imitate tobacco, like bubblegum cigars or Big League Chew bubblegum, which is shredded and looks like chewing tobacco, are now prohibited on school grounds or any off-campus school-sponsored events. And so any student or visitor, like a student from an opposing team, would be in violation of the school's policies if they used those products on school property. The Superior School District Administrator Amy Starzecki said it can be difficult for principals to distinguish between things like beef jerky chew and the real thing because it's designed to look like chewing tobacco. And she said that allowing their use gives the appearance that tobacco use is acceptable, and they don't want to be modeling that for students. So there were some concerns raised about disciplining kids for chewing bubble gum or beef jerky that looks like tobacco. And Starzecki said their code of conduct doesn't include discipline or suspension for using imitation tobacco products. But she said students would likely be asked to just put it away if they're using them.
Well, from tobacco stains, if you will, to clean energy, there's a new report saying how well the state is doing with jobs in that sector.
Yeah, so, you know, we're coming off of the heels of the COVID-19 pandemic, and that caused some significant declines in clean energy jobs in Wisconsin. And now Wisconsin boasts more than 71,000 clean energy jobs following the economic downturn, but the state still gained back less than a third of the jobs lost in 2020. And the latest Clean Jobs Midwest report shows Wisconsin added more than 2,000 jobs last year, but that's still far below pre-pandemic levels when the state had more than 76,000 people working in the clean energy sector. And the report produced by Environmental Entrepreneurs and Evergreen Climate Solutions issued the findings based on federal employment data. The Midwest added back more than 714,000 jobs, regaining about half those lost during the economic downturn across about a dozen states. And despite setbacks, groups say billions in investment through the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal laws are set to boost jobs in the region. And they are urging states to put policies in place to leverage that funding. In Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers released a clean energy plan that estimates the state could create more than 41,000 jobs by the end of the decade. But GOP lawmakers and the Republican-controlled legislature have so far scoffed at Democratic bills to address climate change and clean energy.
All right. Well, looking at more traditional energy, Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels is a part owner of a company that signed a project labor agreement with Enbridge Energy for its pipeline project, and there's some suggestion that's a problem for him. Maybe?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Republican businessman Tim Michaels, who is running to unseat Governor Tony Evers, he stopped in Superior on Sunday and he was touting the Line 5 reroute project and says it needs to move forward across northern Wisconsin. And just as some background, you know, Line 5 is an oil and gas pipeline owned by Canadian firm Enbridge, and the company has proposed rerouting this pipeline around the Bad River Bands Reservation because the tribe sued Enbridge in 2019 to shut down and remove that pipeline from tribal lands. As you said, Tim Michaels is a part owner, along with his brothers, of Michaels Corporation, and that owns the company that signed the project labor agreement that you referenced to build this pipeline if it's approved by regulators. And so Michael says he will divest himself from his family's business, but the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported this week that experts say that won't be easy. You know, state law does prevent public officials from taking actions that would benefit them financially. And his campaign says there will be no conflicts of interest. And his situation kind of parallels issues that come up with Donald Trump, or came up with Donald Trump, his family and businesses while he was president. Experts say, you know, some options available to Michaels could be to set up a blind trust or sell his portion of the company. But even so, if he's elected, he could appoint a new secretary to the Department of Natural Resources, and that agency oversees state environmental permits for the Line 5 project. And so he could have a great influence on environmental permitting of that project and his staff. Governor Tony Evers' campaign said they don't think Michaels is giving straight answers on how he would avoid any conflict of interest if he is elected.
Okay. Well, Rick, going to the Minnesota side, first we have to get to the Minnesota side. The Blatnik Bridge is under construction, but there's another bridge that's been out for 4 years?
Yes, Robin. Residents living in Foxboro near the Wisconsin-Minnesota border have been waiting more than 4 years for a flood-damaged county highway in their neighborhood to be repaired. And it seems they'll be waiting even longer as Douglas County officials are seeking funding through a federal hazard mitigation program to improve the bridge over the Maggie River on County Highway W. The bridge has been washed out several times in recent years because log debris gathers upstream of the bridge. And then during heavy rain, the debris turns the bridge into a dam. According to County Board Chair Mark Liebert, County Highway W is the worst road in the county. During Father's Day storm of 2018, the bridge washed out and has not been repaired since. After completing several repairs of the bridge at a cost of almost $200,000 each time since 2012, state highway officials said it didn't make sense to repair the bridge again without improving it. So four local units of government have adopted resolutions this year urging Douglas County officials to repair the bridge approaches that have been out since 2018. But again, the highway officials say that the goal has been to fix the bridge so that it won't wash out next time the area has a 4 to 6 inch rain event, a project that will likely cost about $125 million. So the county has to ask for money, has asked for one grant that it did not receive, and it has asked for another that it is still waiting for word on. If the county isn't approved for the funding at this point, it will likely repair the road to pre-flood conditions.
Well, from the bridges to the streets, winter, of course, is coming. But Duluth is looking at new technology to deal with it.
Yes, it's never too early to prepare for winter and snow in the Northland. And the city of Duluth announced this week that it plans to deploy some new technology on the roads while also holding residents to account for keeping sidewalks passable this upcoming winter. Duluth's plows are going to be equipped with GPS trackers and software will be used to provide a real-time picture of snow clearing efforts. Jim Benning, the director of Duluth Public Works and Utilities Department, said the technology will be used internally to help city staff monitor the progress of crews and identify any places that were perhaps missed. But in time, it could be rolled out to the public so residents can watch snow clearing efforts advance in real time. Mayor Emily Larson said city staff are also refining plow route maps to ensure maximum efficiency and a targeted prioritized attack to keep traffic flowing. Larson's administration, if you remember, received harsh criticism for its handling of a storm that dropped more than 21 inches of snow on Duluth over the Thanksgiving weekend of 2019, prompting officials to make a number of adjustments. Last winter, two snow emergencies were declared, the first in decades. Benning said the city plans to follow the same routine this coming winter, announcing snow emergencies no later than 4 p.m. and expecting motorists to move their vehicles off snow emergency routes by 9 p.m. that evening. Now, the city will again offer free off-street parking during snow emergencies at so-called amnesty lots, including those at Wheeler Field, Leif Erickson Park, Canal Park, and the University of Minnesota Duluth.
All right. And lastly, maybe coming off of our report on making the Apostle Islands and National Lakeshore more accessible, there are also efforts in Bayfield to help the Connecticut Warbler, which doesn't just live in Connecticut.
No, it doesn't. State and county officials in Wisconsin are conducting emergency habitat work this fall in an 11th-hour effort to bring back more Connecticut warblers, the little songbird that has declined severely from the state's northern pine forests in recent years. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Bayfield County foresters will work this fall and next year to remove brush from stands of mature jack pines to recreate the kind of habitat the little yellow birds need to nest when they return to Wisconsin next spring. The Connecticut warbler has been declining for nearly a half century. It's down 60% nationally, nearly at a rate of 9% annually in northern Minnesota, and it's been down 80% in Wisconsin. Ryan Brady, who's a DNR conservation biologist and Minnesota's bird monitoring coordinator, said this bird is in trouble and it needs help fast. So brush removal this year and next will open the forest and encourage the growth of blueberries and other ground cover to restore the bird's preferred natural conditions. The sparrow-sized birds nest on the ground and generally feed on the ground searching for insects, but they prefer to be among tall jack pine in Wisconsin that are more than 20 feet tall. Connecticut warblers were once fairly common across northern Wisconsin pine forest, but a 2021 survey of 60 sites where they had been found previously found only one nesting site. And a survey this spring found only three nesting pairs across their core habitat area of Bayfield and Douglas counties.
All right. Well, if you want to know, here is what the Connecticut warbler sounds like. And if you hear that, leave it alone and leave it to the experts. We've been speaking with Rick Lovers of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Preston Gunderson. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
It's the same mirror as always, as the birds welcome the light. Same headache as most days, just trying to get by. Sing along with the ignition, settle into dusty miles. These hands know where they're going, they've been at for a while. You carry the weight.